When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello, hey, nday, elkomwe, ute, obge.
You're doing Pig Latin, which I've never learned.
It's so easy.
I can't do it. I've never wrapped my head around it.
Foe. Ein fe, you may, aim ne, ca, harley k.
Okay, so Pig Latin. You take the first letter to the end and add an a. Day, my a. And
it's taking too long.
This is how slow you were. And name really doesn't work.
Hello and welcome to Goblet of Wine. I'm Charlie.
And I'm Hannah. And we're 20-somethings reading our favourite childhood book, but this time with added alcohol and cynicism.
In today's episode, we're talking about... Ten?
I feel like it's ten.
Ten! Of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
So, grab a glass of whatever you can find in your local corner shop and join us on this drunken, reminiscent journey. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm disappointed that neither of us are that fluent in Pig Latin.
I've honestly never even tried it. I genuinely don't know how to do it.
Very simple.
I'm sure I can work out to say it. I don't understand how people can listen to it and hear what's being said.
Yeah. I can't say people speak Pig Latin at me that often, so I don't...
Children speak it to each other, though.
Yeah.
I've witnessed
children
them
are weird,
do it.
Weird demons. You know who's a weird little demon? Todd.
Todd just attacked us both.
Yeah.
Viciously.
He hates Hannah.
I mean, he attacked you too.
Yeah, but I think because he gets upset by you and then he decides to take it out on the rest of the world.
I didn't do anything.
He didn't. He just... To be fair, he pretty much hates everyone that isn't me. But I do think he especially hates you.
He's been really good with me all day. And then I was eating dinner and clearly the offence he took is I didn't give him any dinner, which is ironic because a bit of dinner fell out my mouth. So I let him have it. And then I went to touch his head and he attacked me.
Clearly the portion wasn't big enough.
Clearly
or
not.
Or he didn't like that you'd pre-chewed it.
I did get my mouth leftovers.
Yeah. Mm. He's a horrible antisocial boy. He only loves me, but I kind of love that he only loves me. You know?
Oh God, if you were a mum of a boy child, you'd be one of those boy mums who doesn't want them to ever fall in love with a woman because you've got a slightly weird thing where they're sort of in love with you.
Yeah. It's how I am with Todd. Let's face it. I really love leaning into the really obnoxious cat mum thing to the point where the line used to be really fine between it being ironic and actual. There's no longer
line. There's no line. The line is a dot to you.
Yeah. And I'm the thing is, you know, when I'm I know that people slag me off and laugh at me for it. Don't care. Don't
Who's
care.
Who's slagging you off?
But yeah, don't care. He's my little boy. Aren't you?
He's just
walked in the
vicious
room,
killer.
Glaring at both of us. He's literally licking his lips.
He's a vicious killer.
He did win a fight with a fox.
The skin of a killer, Bella.
He's now cleaning his armpit. Oh my God, the other day I put on deodorant and then he started to lick it off.
That's really disgusting.
It's really gross.
You two need some boundaries.
I didn't let him. He just started doing it.
How are you?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. I mean, we recorded an hour ago, so...
And then we ate some food. We watched some fresh meat.
For some reason, we have decided fresh meat is our... when we're together and need to eat or need something to stick on in the background show, but neither of us are watching it without the other. So we're tuned in 3 minutes into episode three, yep, which we last watched over a month ago.
And now we just paused it with 9 minutes left to go.
I don't know why we've done this. Because we watch things, we both like having something on while eating, otherwise it's weird. So
I don't want to just sit and listen to you two.
No, so that's the only time we put something on. But then it needs to be something we've both seen, therefore, because we're watching it so, like,
cut
up.
Seen nothing.
Yeah. Sells.
Yeah.
I did tell Charlie earlier I'm watching Lost, which, a show which has been out 20 years.
And there's so many shows that I know she would love that I keep telling her to watch. No. She won't watch them. She'll watch Lost.
I just decided I wanted to watch it. And once I decide something, that's it. And also, if you tell me to watch something, I will do the opposite because I am stubborn.
Do not watch Desperate Housewives. You will hate it.
Okay, great.
What are we drinking, Hannah?
Charlie, what are we drinking? We were in the corner shop.
The Offie.
And I spotted this bottle and I was like, lol, that's hilarious. Do I actually know what it is? No. But I've heard people talk about it. Neil might have made me try some at some point, but I can't really remember. It's called Buckfast. It's tonic wine made by the Benedictine monks in Buckfast Abbey, Devon, England. It is a red wine-based aperitif, 99.28%, with high caffeine content.
Joy.
It is 15%, which is stronger than normal wine. I'm worried about the caffeine. Why is it called tonic wine?
I don't know.
All questions we might find out the answer to when we can't sleep tonight and end up Googling things for 10 hours.
I really have struggled to sleep for the past couple of days. So honestly, at this point, I'm kind of like, okay, it's just, it is what it is. Oh God, why does it taste like that? That tastes like children's craft supplies.
So weird. Like, it is red wine. I can feel it's red wine, but
I can feel it in my bones.
And it's
red wine.
Fizzy. I was expecting it to be fizzy because of the tonic element, but it's also not fizzy.
You're so intelligent.
Do you know what I mean, though?
Yeah. I do think it tastes like sugary Play-Doh.
I just don't understand what we're drinking. Shall I Google if we've got any interesting facts about Buckfast? I feel like Neil has made a joke about Buckfast before when we've been in old pubs.
Todd, do you want to drink some Buckfast? You love a bit of booze.
Oh, he's looking so sad. Fortified wine with added caffeine.
I feel like I've never been drinking wine and been like, you know what this needs? Added caffeine.
It is now made under a license granted by the monastery. It is based on a traditional recipe from France. The wine distributor reported record sales of 43 million as of March 2017.
Who is buying this? Bless you.
Sorry. Despite being marketed as a tonic, Buckfast has become notorious in some parts of Scotland. That's what I have heard of it. For its association with Ned culture and antisocial behaviour.
The antisocial.
And Ned is a hooligan, lout or petty criminal in Scotland.
It's Todd! You're a Ned.
It's very popular in Glasgow. Wow, okay. So Yobbos drink it in Scotland, but it's made by monks in England.
Of course.
It has achieved popularity in working class, student and bohemian communities in the United Kingdom and Ireland.
This is ridiculous.
It has been nicknamed in Northern Ireland Lurgan Champagne.
Incredible.
Lurgan meaning, oh, it's a town in County Armagh in Northern Ireland.
I hate that I'm probably going to be left with like half a bottle of this.
It's great. It can be a new pre-drinks thing.
It's going to go off.
That's a good point. So yeah, we've gone from champagne to Lurgan Champagne. Like, you know, we're really into trying niche British drinks right now.
Like champagne.
No, I meant this one, not champagne. Do you know what I didn't realise till I was in my mid-20s that champagne is called champagne only because it is made in the Champagne region of France, and the reason why we call other things like Prosecco in Carver is not because they taste different, it's because it's not made in the Champagne region of France. I didn't know that. I thought it was a type of drink.
I thought everyone knew that.
Not me. I learned that in an office setting. That was embarrassing.
You uncultured swine.
Yep. Also didn't know that Burgundy was named after an area in France either. The colour is named after the wine, which is made in a certain area of France.
Yeah.
I knew nothing. I'm dumb. And it's sad. Chapter 10. Creature's Tale. We have no patrons. Join our Patreon.
They all left.
They all left. We're down to zero. No, we're just recording two episodes back to back, so we don't have any. Okay. So it's the next morning. They've woken up in the drawing room. I literally highlighted half a paragraph and wrote a paragraph of my own about this.
Jesus Christ.
Ron had had a fit of gallantry and insisted that Hermione sleep on the cushions from the sofa so that her silhouette was raised above his.
How big are these cushions?
I think it means like the cushions, like the base bits. So not like your sofa where it's fitted in, you know, like mine when you take the bits off.
Yeah, but like that's still, why would she be that raised above him?
Her arm curved to the floor, her fingers inches from Ron's. Harry wondered whether they had fallen asleep holding hands. The idea made him feel strangely lonely. My little heart died when I first read this. Number one, Ron is so in love, it hurts. And we're going to lose it all in the tent and I hate it because he's being so good. And what I like about Ron being so good and actually being able to like court Hermione is he's still in essence Ron. He's still making all these like rude, semi-offensive, sarcastic jokes. He's still like has his Ron traits whilst managing to be a decent human being to Hermione, who is showing her affection and kindness. The bar is low for men and I love it.
I just really don't think that J.K. Rowling can write romance. And whilst this definitely isn't her worst romance in terms of coming out of nowhere, I just don't get why they like each other. Just for me, there's just nothing in the text where, like, I get it.
I get it. I get it wholeheartedly.
I don't. Like, every now and then, yeah, they have, like, a nice bit of banter or whatever. But, like, the majority of it is just, like, them being, like, rude and insensitive to each other and just having absolutely nothing in common. I don't get it.
I do. It's a mixture of those moments of banter, the rudeness being them actually like testing each other. And also, and I know that this is kind of controversial, but at the end of the day, in real life, love often can't be separated from the experiences you've shared together. And you don't just like love someone out of nowhere. Even if you, you know, meet someone on a dating app and you are dating from the beginning, like, love is a mixture of your shared experiences quite often. And yes, like people can call it like trauma bonding, what happens to Ron and Hermione and the fact that they are the only two to understand what Harry goes through. But I don't necessarily think that is the worst thing ever, because part of the reason why they're so bonded is because they have grown up with this unique experience of being Harry's best friend. And I don't necessarily view that as a bad thing.
But I just think with that logic, you could also argue that Hermione and Harry could be a thing.
But they don't have that chemistry. Ron and Hermione then have this chemistry, this banter. I think they do.
I don't remotely see it.
I'm sorry.
You should be.
But they do. They do.
It doesn't come out of nowhere purely because they've been being jealous of each other for several books, but I don't see the foundation in there being any actual like romance there at all.
I think also sometimes you just can't explain why you like someone. There's no rhyme or reason to it. There's no...
Yeah, but I think when you're reading a book, you don't want it to be like, the fuck do they like each other for? Like, whilst I get that, yeah, in real life, I just think when you're reading a book, you don't want it to come across like them. Yeah.
I just feel so the opposite because my whole life I've been like, Ron and Hermione are it. But it is controversial. Like, so many people disagree. So I don't know. I kind of like that it's up for that much discussion. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, like, I don't hate them together the way that some people do. And I think that they can have some cute moments. But it's just weird to me, this whole, like, they've been pining for each other for years. Because I feel like until it kind of got to the point that they started pining for each other. And I think part of it is because they were so young, I don't think that you're really like 11 or 12, like having any concept of that, aside from like when you think you have a crush, but it's just because you think that that's what you should be doing and you're trying to be older than you are. So I don't know. It kind of feels like the moment they become of an age to start having crushes, they have like crush on each other. But it just makes it feel like it kind of comes out of nowhere for me.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's the opposite for me. Like, this has been building for so long and it's such nice payoff to see, like, even though I know this is going to be ripped away from me and that's why it hurts, it's really nice payoff to see them actually liking each other for once in a healthy way where they're both kind of on the same page. But again, it's the wrong timing and that's why I find this upsetting, because, you know, we've had, you know, a book where Hermione clearly likes Ron, but he's too immature to notice. Then a book where Ron clearly likes Hermione, but Hermione has kind of moved on, doesn't want anything to do with it. And finally, we've got them both liking each other at the same time in a healthy, non-jealous, good, emotionally mature way. And the timing is absolutely terrible.
Yeah, but I like that element of it. I just don't get why they like each other, aside from it being a bit like the only gays in the...
I don't know. I think the incredibly intelligent girl and the funny, light-hearted boy will always be a trope I like as well.
It's like me and Neil.
Well, no, because I am not like, I am not on the intelligence levels of Hermione, am I?
Kind of on the
dumbass bitch levels.
But I don't even think Hermione's that like intelligent. She's just bookish.
Well, and she tries incredibly hard. I think that's where I relate to Hermione and like the, no, actually I'm not like naturally born super clever. I just try and try and try.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get why people were a bit unhappy with it. And I do get where it appears out of nowhere. But still to this day, when I read this section, I feel the exact same way I did at 12 when this book came out, where my stomach genuinely got, you know, when people talk about that, I'm kicking my feet. Like, you know, when the Amelia de Moldenberg like episode just dropped of, we're talking about the chicken shop date with,
I know, but anytime it's her and Andrew Garfield as well, that's the ultimate.
So when people describe her and Andrew Garfield, and I'm talking about the Paul Mescal episode that just dropped, where people describe it as like kicking your feet because it's so
cute.
Like Ron and Hermione literally still to this day give me that.
To this gay.
To this gay.
I don't disagree with that. And like to the credit of like the ship, I think that part of the thing, words, I think that the fact that we get Harry Potter through Harry Potter's eyes means that we miss out on a lot of it, either because he's inobservant or because
he's out in Dumbledore's office a lot.
Yeah, I think the only way that I can really get on board with Ron and Hermione in anything other than just like high school proximity crushes is the idea that they have off-page conversations when Harry's off doing X, Y, Z. But because we don't see it, to me, I can find it cute in that it's like a, you know, high school proximity crush, but I can't say that I see the foundation there for it to actually be like a long-term end game.
I think the other thing is I built it up so much in my head that when you say, oh, we don't see that, in my head I'm like, yes, we do. No, we don't. There's this tiny like peppered hints of the fact that they have like quite a rich relationship outside of Harry, you know, when they like Harry starts talking about that they have conversations where they don't even speak to each other, and he talks about the fact they've clearly been whispering about him behind their back and Harry finds it offensive. Those to me are like the hints that they clearly have this connection, but that connection is entirely based around Harry. But again, that's what I mean, that like you can say that as a negative, but at the end of the day, that is what their life was like. And maybe a good thing to come out of the horrible things they suffered through was their relationship to each other. But yeah, I do get why people weren't happy at the end. And I do even get J.K. Rowling even came out and said, I always envisioned them ending up together. And by book 7, it was more difficult than I thought to put them together because they themselves as characters had grown further apart than she envisaged.
And she's not a good romance writer.
No, she's not. She's literally not. She's a good... The thing is, she's almost a good slow burn friends teetering on lovers writer. Like the Ron Hermione thing is exactly the same as what she does with, if you've read any of the Strike series, Strike and Robin. But I can tell,
oh god, do they end up romantic?
They will do. We're book 7 in and they haven't yet. But that's the thing, at the moment she's, I am still reading them, downloading them illegally and like giving them on a charity just because I'm like, could I just read if they get together or not at this fucking point? But she's gonna fumble the bag massively either way at this point. I mean, she already has with that series, but because she's left it too long for them to get together, it makes no sense, so she can sell more books. But if they do get together, she's just going to write it badly. So like either way, she's fumbled the bag at this point. But she does a very similar thing of them being friends, all these traumatic experiences they share together, but there's a romantic and sexual undertone.
I read a romantasy book that's genuinely the worst book I've ever read. But part of what I found so puzzling, there was no slow burn, not a single moment of it. The characters met and then were into each other. And I was like,
no.
I was like, I've never come across, what?
Give me the slowest burn.
Like it's the joy isn't in the actual, like them getting together or the sex scenes or whatever. Like it's in the like lusting. I want them to be lusty. I want them to be, no, there's only one bed in the inn.
Charlie sees the same book over and over again.
Yeah.
No. The joy is in the slow burn.
Yeah.
Like, this is why, and this is why I don't understand why people don't like friends to lovers. I completely understand why people prefer enemies to lovers. I'm personally in friends to lovers camp, but I completely understand it because you get a naturally slow burn with enemies to lovers. When people like friends to lovers is boring, I'm like, no, the slow burn is built into friends to lovers. Come on.
This is the thing. Like, I have a friend who, like, our entire thing is, like, flirting with each other, and she's constantly like, but like, is anything, like, what's happening here? Is anything gonna happen here? And I'm like, no, because that's not the fun part. I want to flirt with you. I want there to be sexual tension. I don't actually want to have sex with you. Like, not that I don't, but like, you know what I mean? I'm like, to me, this might sound really odd, but genuinely, like, the flirting and the sexual tension is so much better than any, you know, boning. I don't know if that's like a wildly hot take, but
I think in real life it might be a hot take. In media that you consume, absolutely not. It's the correct take.
Yeah. But like, insert, like, of, you understand contextually with the person.
Yes, I understand contextually with what you're saying. 100%. Yeah.
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 But yeah. She's like, is anything going to happen? I'm like, yeah.
Keep up the butterflies.
No.
Anyway.
Flirt with me. Boost my ego. That's what I want.
So yeah, my point number one with that giant paragraph and tangent we went on is Ron is very in love. But point number two is the line about the idea made Harry feel strangely lonely. And I think this is Harry finally, the stupid idiot, realizing that they've always been a three. And of the three, him and Ron have the special relationship. Him and Ron are best friends. And
gay!
There's sorry. Hermione. And he is going through this very adult realization of, oh my God, what if they're more important to each other than either of them are to me separately? And I get that this is a horrible adult realization to go through, that you're going through in the shittiest time ever where you're trying to be murdered by multiple people. But it's just like, Harry, baby, like, they were always going to end up more important to each other than yeah. they were to you by nature of you being the center of attention constantly. Mm-hmm.
Harry pretty much then goes from this depressing train of thought to then thinking about his grief in relation to Dumbledore. And honestly, what I find really relatable about this is sometimes you have those mornings.
Gotcha.
And you wake up and from the get-go, you're like, I feel terrible.
Yeah.
All I can think is like horrible, depressing thoughts.
You put the saddest songs known to humanity on.
Yeah. And like I had one day like this week where I just like, I didn't sleep, and then I woke up in the early hours and I was like, well, that's it. But tried to get back to sleep, and then was all I was thinking was horrible, depressing, miserable thoughts. Mm. And then throughout the entire day, just about everything that could go wrong went wrong. And I was like, I'm just going to give up on today. Like, and I feel like this is Harry like starting to have this day where he just like wakes up, thinks about like Hermione and Ron, and then is like, you know what? Now I'm going to dwell on my grief.
Yeah. But good for Harry for realizing this extremely adult realization, which I don't think he's ever acknowledged in the text, where he basically compares what happened or what could have happened to Ariana as to Dudley. And had Dumbledore been like Dudley, content to watch neglect and abuse as long as it did not affect him. And I don't think Harry has ever admitted textually him, not another character, that he was neglected and abused. He's yeah. always just been like, that's my life, whatever.
Yeah.
And like, this is a gut-wrenching comparison to compare Dumbledore to Dudley. That's because yeah. Dumbledore is the one that came in book six and said to the Dursleys, you have inflicted another type of neglect on the son that you love, on Dudley. So like, whoo, to then pull this is, yeah. Oh God.
I think it's not an entirely fair comparison in that Harry and Dudley are the same age.
Yeah.
Whereas Dumbledore was a few years older. I mean, either way, I don't think it's massively fair to put on either of them because, yes, even though Dumbledore was a few years older and had a certain amount of independence because he went to boarding school, like, at the end of the day, what was he actually supposed to do? He was still, like, a child, a teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
At the time, like, what could he actually have done
yeah.
until obviously his mother passed away? But it's definitely not fair to put on Dudley. Dudley was the same age and it was his parents doing it. Like, what was he supposed to do?
Yeah, I think Harry's thinking he could have at least shown like personal kindness to me. But I yeah. think this shows what a bad state of mind Harry is in currently, because we know he actually has not, if not pleasant, but cordial feeling towards Dudley in this moment. So mm-hmm. this switch around here is clearly showing what a bad state of mind he's in, because yeah. he actually doesn't really hold ill will towards Dudley. He holds ill, and Petunia, he holds ill will towards Vernon, as he should. But I think it also shows what, how Muriel has infested his thoughts so yeah. much. Like, this will burrow into his mind for the next months and months and months until mm-hmm. it has literally like ruined all his memories of Dumbledore.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, I think it was J.K. Rowling that said that she considered putting like a reunion with Dudley in the prologue with him having like a wizarding child. And it's not that I wanted him to have a wizarding child. I think that's a bit convenient. But it would have been nice for him to be in there, or not even directly, but I just want to know that they had some kind of relationship and maybe like bonded over their like mutual trauma.
Yeah.
But, you know, the prologue was a heap of shit. And I'm also kind of iffy on prologues anyway. Because
you mean epilogues, don't you?
Epilogues, sorry. I'm also kind of iffy on them because I'm like, sometimes we don't need to find out all of the happy ever afters.
And if we are going to, it should be for wider plot, not who you married. And I'm saying this as someone who's a massive fan of the relationships in Harry Potter.
You just like marrying your high school crush.
I didn't have a crush on Neil in high school.
Yeah, sure.
Harry starts wandering off throughout the house without leaving a note for the other two, which is cruel and selfish. Leave a note, you fucking dumbass. Someone tried to murder you yesterday.
Like, I'm kind of on Harry's side.
No, leave a note.
They can't be on each other's arses for the next God knows how long that they're going
to... this morning when someone tried to murder them twice yesterday.
What's he going to leave a note with?
I've gone wandering off upstairs.
No, but what's he going to write it with or on?
Oh, Hermione's got loads of pen and paper in that bag. Loads.
He can't go writing through a bag. He might find a tampon.
Oh my God. How many tampons did Hermione have to pack? Or is there a wizarding menstrual spell?
Oh, I reckon she just had a menstrual cup.
Did menstrual cups exist in the late 90s?
I'm sure an equivalent did. You know what? I don't get how they work. Diaphragms?
I genuinely don't understand. That's not a menstrual product, though. It's a contraception product.
No, I know.
Yeah. But... no, every time it's mentioned in like Friends, I'm like, what the fuck is that? How is it working?
Because, okay, maybe I'm just completely naive to what it is, but isn't it literally a cup that goes into you to catch the cum?
It's like a disc, not a cup, but yes.
Yeah, but it's like
I'm pretty sure it has spermicide built into it, but how that spermicide like keeps up, I don't know.
Yeah, and because I don't get how you then get it out without risking spilling the cum.
That's... okay, so what I presume is you leave it in long enough for the cum to drip out, but still, there would be enough left in that would not be very effective. Like, not very effective in the sense that, like, most contraception, barrier contraception, should be, like, 99.9% effective, whereas, like... because, like, surely that would leave the same amount in that the pull-out method would leave in, you know?
I'm Googling it.
All right.
It fits inside your vagina and prevents sperm passing through the cervix. You need to use it with a gel. Oh, so you use it with a gel that kills sperm.
Oh.
You only have to use a diaphragm or cap when you have sex, but you must leave it in for at least 6 hours. This just seems inefficient. I'm going to Google diaphragm.
Oh, yeah, what's its rate of...
well, that is not high enough. 92% to 96%. Nope. Absolutely
not.
That's not
very high.
And also, I don't get how you get it out, because I'm really bad at even getting a menstrual cup out.
And that's got a spare... yeah, surely it's sitting up high enough for the penis to go all the way in, that then your fingers, what are they grabbing onto?
Yeah, I don't get it. It just... I would just rather use a condom.
Yeah. It was clearly like a trend, because I've never met anyone this age that used them, but they are all over like 90s sitcoms and things like that.
Yeah, I know. My mum used to have one, and I'm like...
I assume and hope to God that wizards have some sort of better menstrual product than muggles do, and Hermione is not having to deal with a cup or tampons or anything like that on this camping trip.
Yeah, hopefully she like got the pill or something.
Yeah,
and because... just kept taking it.
Well, they're probably not eating enough that she probably actually stopped her period, the poor thing. Like, anyway, so Harry's creeping around the house, creeping and sneaking. He looks in the bedroom where he and Ron slept last time. He looks at the portrait of Nigellus Black, which will become important later. And finally, he reaches the top landing and sees Sirius's bedroom, which he's never been inside. It's this like big old bedroom with a huge like carved four-poster bed. But Sirius has really, really and truly made it his own. Oh, do you know what I was going to do? I just remembered. Sorry. Based on this chapter and our previous discussions and discussions with a friend the other day, I was going to search my Facebook and see if I have any photos of my old room.
Excellent.
Let me have a quick look.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, one of my favourite things is, like, teenage bedrooms.
God, the self-expression.
I know. And, like, I love in films whenever they've, like, styled, like, a teenage girl's bedroom.
Yeah.
And it's normally just the girls' bedrooms that are really cool. I'm going to also see if I've got any photos of mine. But, yeah, guys, when it's at least done in this way, I was also going to say, because we previously had the conversation about the posters.
Yes, that's what made me think I want to look this up.
Yeah, because Sirius has the like posters of like muggle women in bikinis, which iconic, absolute slay. contextually.
Yeah, contextually for Sirius. Slay.
It made me think about, you know, me saying that my ex had the one that was all the sex positions from HMV. Sirius definitely had that one.
Gotcha. Like, the thing is, I hate it, but in Sirius, it's slay.
Yeah, it's all about the context.
I can see it slightly in this one. Don't laugh. These are like some quotes I printed out on the walls. And you can see I wrote on the mirror here.
Of course you did.
I can see now why people always say, like, take photos of your childhood bedroom, because it really annoys me. I can't just, like, pull this up and find it.
That's a bit of my collage.
Beautiful. See, that's what I wish I'd taken. It's so random.
Right.
Hashtag so random. Anyway. Sirius is that girl and has photos of half-naked Muggle girls.
The fact he would have gone so out of his way is so funny to me.
I know. So he finds a photo of the Marauders stuck on the wall and kind of looks at each of them, and he starts to think whether he is placing opinions about the expressions on their face based on what he knows about them now, which is like a very grown-up thought to have. Is that a dead bird?
Yeah.
Why did you take a photo of a dead bird? You're so edgy. You're such an edgelord.
Right?
Yeah, he starts thinking about whether he's placing opinions on the photo based on what he knows about them now, which is like very grown up, Harry. Good for you. And he realizes as he's kind of looking around the room that it's been ransacked like every other room he's seen in here. So clearly someone has been in and been looking for stuff. So he starts picking stuff up off the floor, like trying to work out what things are, and finds a handwritten letter that's ripped at the bottom, begins to read it. And as he's reading, he realizes it's from Lily to Padfoot. Now, this letter is very sweet, but for me, it raises a huge plot hole. Sirius did not live in this room when this letter was sent. Yeah. So how the fuck has it ended up in this room?
Duh.
The only thing I can think is when he was arrested and sent to Azkaban for life, wherever he was living, like a flat, which he says he got the money for a flat at like 18 after he'd lived with the Potters for a year, was cleared out and sent to his parents as his next of kin.
Yeah, I guess it must be.
Like, that's really the only explanation. But yeah, like, he was not living with the Blacks at this time that this letter would have been sent. But the letter's from Lily.
My thoughts on this. So they're what, like 20, 21 at this point?
Yeah, 21. Yeah, it's about 3 months before they're killed.
Still calling him Padfoot. I'm sorry, cringe.
Cute.
No.
Cute.
Cringe. You're like a fucking adult. You have a child. Don't write, dear Padfoot. The other thing that really made me laugh was, like, at first I had the thought, like, what the fuck is she writing him a letter for? And then it made me think about, like, when you were a child and it was your birthday or Christmas and you'd unwrap presents and your mum would be writing a list of who got what.
So you could write your thank you notes. Because then she would write,
like, a thank you letter to each. And I'm like, this is Lily writing the thank you letter. So I was like, okay,
also,
it's feasible.
Also, phones don't exist in their stupid world.
No, but they can, like, apparate.
She's in hiding.
Yeah, but I'm sure he pops in every now and then.
Well, she asked him to pop in to cheer James up. Exactly. So clearly he hasn't done it in a while. But yeah, letters are their main form of communication. So yeah, it's a letter to Sirius basically saying thank you for the present and then updating Sirius on their life. The bit that broke my fucking heart, which I'd never actually realised, is Lily is thanking Sirius for getting Harry's birthday present, which is a toy broomstick that Harry can already fly really well. Book one, Harry is naturally gifted on a broom and everyone's just like, it must be your father's ability. Harry had already learned to ride, not a proper broom, but he had already ridden a broom and no one was around to remember to tell him.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to cry.
I don't think that's why he's good at it though. Like, I feel like you don't remember.
No, because once you've learned to ride a bike, you never
Yeah, but not when you're one. You learn to ride a bike when you're a lot older than that.
Yeah, but Harry is naturally gifted on a broom, but he also, when he was one.
My thought on this was, this is, like, quite frankly, the only present I can think that is more inconsiderate to the parents of a child than this is a recorder.
It's so serious, though, to get him something that inconsiderate. I mean, so serious.
Absolutely, yes. Perfectly in character. But if I was a parent and I had a one-year-old and they got him a broom, something he could fall off, something he could destroy everything breakable around him, I would be like, you are no longer my friend.
You know how funny James found it.
Yeah, for sure. But then that just makes me think that Sirius and James were finding it hysterical, whilst it was probably Lily that was getting stressed out and having to clean up after it and stuff.
Yeah, he did nearly kill the cat. But also, Harry never knew he had a cat.
Oh.
That sentence.
That I find sad. And I also really love, like, the confirmation that, of course, they're a cat family. They were never going to be a dog family.
I like to think that Sirius went around like, I hate that fucking cat. Like, hissing
just
at it. Like,
transfigured it into the dog.
Yeah,
to
just
piss it
to
off.
Piss off the cat. Like, could you leave the cat alone? And Sirius is there like,
yeah.
I like to imagine it.
I do hate the theories, though, of people being like, Crookshanks was the Potter. No.
Shut up. No,
there could
wasn't.
Be more than three cats.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not saying Harry fully remembers how to ride a broom because he rode on one when he was one. But I do think that's where a portion of his natural ability comes from. And I do find it fucking tragic that he learns this age 17.
Yeah.
So the other thing that come up is the letter is about...
Sirius gets him his first two brooms.
Oh my God.
Wait, no.
No, his first and his third.
Yeah.
The other
I'm so good at remembering books that I've read many, many, many times.
Fine. The other thing we learn is that Dumbledore still has the invisibility cloak. Wormtail has been round and is looking very stressed.
Oh, I just like went to yawn and like my jaw properly like... I hope the microphone didn't clear that. Click. It like properly made like not even a clicking noise, like Ooh. A grating noise. Oh,
lovely.
Sorry.
Yeah, Wormtail's been round and has been looking very down and stressed, and Bathilda Bagshot pops up again and has been popping around most days.
It's really like we're all of a sudden gonna hammer in
that they all knew Bagshot. Harry then starts not only like being so pleased he's found this letter and like the contents of it, but literally is incredibly emotional and grief-stricken about, oh, I broke my heart, about the fact that Lily writes her G's the same way Harry writes his G's. And he says each G feels like a friendly little wave glimpsed from behind a veil.
You know what really stupid, unhinged thought I had about this was, I was trying to think about like certain ways to write G. The only thing that came into my head was like the glossier G. And I literally had visions of both Lily and Harry writing like full on handwritten essays. But every G is the glossier G, but like properly like bubble writing as
oh
well.
Oh my God. Well, it is a bit like that isn't something that's inherit to be passed down. But that's how fucking grief stricken Harry is. How little he knows about his parents, that he's clinging onto the way she writes her G's. But I do like, for once, this is some Lily backstory. It's Lily writing to Sirius. It's not James. Like,
yeah.
And also, Harry says about the fact the letter was an incredible treasure. Lily Potter lived. Her warm hand had once moved across this parchment. It's like, you know that moment when you realize, oh my God, your parents lived lives before me. Like, they had these, like, full, incredible lives. Like, he's realizing that. And it's very heartbreaking. Impatiently brushing away the wetness, and he's just like sobbing over this letter, bless him. And he starts pulling out things. There's a cat. Why would Dumbledore have the invisibility cloak? Oh my God, was Pettigrew looking really upset because he knew he was about to betray them? Bathilda Bagshot again. There's a small mention of Aberforth, the goat charmer.
Yeah. I don't think they can see it, but Todd's like attacking my skirt.
Aww. He then starts looking for the other half of the letter and fully tears apart the room looking for it. And finally, he doesn't find the other half of the letter. He finds another half of a photograph. And the half he finds is him as a baby zooming in and out of the picture with a pair of legs that must be James running after it. So he tucks both halves into his pocket. Keeps searching, doesn't find it. And eventually Hermione finds him. How big is this house that he hasn't heard? How big is this house that he hasn't heard Ron and Hermione shouting for him for the last half an hour? Like, is he deaf?
Clearly.
But yeah, Hermione finally finds him. I love that she shouts for Ron, like, Ron, we found him. Ron never then appears in the room or comes all the way upstairs. He's just like, great, I don't care.
Even when they eventually, like, shout for him, it says that it takes him a minute. I'm like, what?
Why?
I understand that it's supposed to be a big house, but it's still, at the end of the day, a townhouse.
Yeah.
What townhouse takes a minute to run through?
I like to think Ron was actually like really pissed off with Harry about this and was just like, do you know what? I don't fucking care. He's making a fuss again. He's again trying to become the centre of attention.
Yep.
Ron woke up with like Hermione's hands in his and was like, I'm so happy.
And then she woke up and was like,
he's gone. And he's like, for fuck's sake, I just want one morning, please.
Yeah, and then she's like, get up, Ron. We need to look for him. And he's like,
One minute. You just go. Just go. Yeah. Ron does shout, good. Tell him from me he's a git. So he's clearly not happy about this whole thing. Harry shows Hermione everything that he's found, and Hermione is clearly like, oh, that's nice for you, Harry. It doesn't mean much, does it? She's kind of like, I understand why you're sad.
Yeah.
And Harry tries to explain what Muriel said about Dumbledore, and Hermione's like, come on, you know the lies Skeeter told you in the fourth year. And this is the thing, like, Harry believes Rita, despite the fact that she said that him and Hermione were going out in fourth year when they had never, ever gone out. Neither of them have ever been interested in the other. Like, the
maybe
lies
Harry's
that
being
Rita
gaslit into being like, maybe me and Hermione
did go out. Oh my God.
Yeah, Harry's but a Hermione, dumb bitch, let's be honest.
But Hermione's really regretting letting Skeeter out of that jar.
Yeah, should have pickled her.
Hermione's clearly hungry because she's like, that's nice, Harry. Should we go get breakfast now? I am hungry.
After your drink, I'd be nice.
No. No.
At this point, you are asking for it.
So funny.
They leave and Harry looks at the door opposite Sirius's room. Yeah, Harry leaves, looks at the door opposite him, and we have two brilliant reveals in this chapter.
Yeah. Is it in the film? Does Ron realise the RAB thing?
I genuinely don't remember it being in the film.
I feel like either it's in the film or I'm just misremembering. But either way, I think that it should be Ron that realises. One, and I can't defend this, I can't say with any concise reasoning why, but it just feels like a Ron realisation.
Okay.
It feels like this is Ron's brand of intelligence.
Sure, yeah.
That he's good at things like chess. He's good at, like, spotting patterns and stuff like that. And
sure, okay.
I also feel like Ron gets so few moments and so few wins that this should be in his. I think that they realise it too quickly. I'm really sorry. But, like, just being like, Regulus Arcturus Black, R.A.B. Maybe I'm just really inobservant.
But they haven't thought of anything but RAB for 3 months at this point.
Yes, they have. They were thinking about the wedding. They were thinking about being horny.
The whole time it's been like, but who's RAB? RAB? Who's RAB? But Harry even says he looks at it and then it's like, it slowly clunks into place before he says his body feels excitement before his brain has caught up with what's happening.
My thing is, I understand from a narrative point of view why it happens on the first day. It's, you know, you wouldn't want to be like, and then they milled about the house for 2 days. And then they realise, I get it.
Yeah.
But I'm just choosing to believe in my head canon.
Yeah.
They spot it. They maybe like go in the room, blah, blah, blah. They just think Regulus, the brother, blah, blah, blah. 3 days later, Ron goes,
R.A.B.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that. But anyway, they realise R.A.B. And they call them both up. Ron finally appears after 20 minutes of doing who the fuck knows what. What it turns out he's been doing while he was with Hermione earlier is dealing with spiders. So he's clearly trying to impress Hermione massively. He's like, if it's massive spiders again, you've been dealing with them already without running screaming from this house. Well done, Ron. So they walk into Regulus's room and it's immediately obvious that Regulus loves Slytherin and the Death Eaters. There's a whole...
Hates minorities.
Yes. When we were talking about, you know, scrapbook-style walls, Regulus has got one about Voldemort and the Death Eaters and a big logo. He's painted on the wall and all of this.
Okay. See, I kind of like to think, because I know that they assume it's like, oh, he was like a massive fanboy and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't think that makes sense because I think obviously he turns on Voldemort in the end. So I don't get why, if that was because he loved him, surely he would have gotten rid of the propaganda. I think that this is in his era of turning on Voldemort. And this is like research. This is him like, you know, he's got like a collage ball with like
line.
Yeah, the like pins with the string and stuff like that. He's like full on doing detective work. It's not like fanboying, it's like...
I also think he doesn't take it down because, as Hermione says later, he's trying to protect the rest of the family. So he has to maintain this image. But I do like that it's a research wall and there's strings on and everything and they just don't realise.
Yeah.
What I find weird is the room is locked. None of the other rooms have been locked. But this room has also been searched.
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth would the searcher lock this room behind them?
I don't know. And it's also just any kind of wizarding lock where you can literally, a la Hermora,
it's
just
not
like,
locked.
Doesn't exist then, does it? It's a first year spell.
Yeah. And it's just totally unnecessary to be in the text because The room has been ransacked anyway, so I don't know. Anyway, so they start searching immediately. They spend over an hour searching. There's this funny bit where Hermione axes it, and then Ron's like, great, can we stop searching? And she's like, no, no, if it didn't work, we have to search by hand. And Ron's like, brilliant idea. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It's valid.
Yeah. So, yeah, they search for over an hour, and they... Harry and Ron are really disheartened not to find it, but Hermione is kind of almost like emboldened by not finding it and being like, it's going to be here. It's going to be in the house. And she's doing that thing where you talk out loud and she's walking out the room and going, it's going to be in the house. It's just got to be there. Because, you know, we were in here that summer and we were clearing so much things out. There's so many things in that house. We were, and then she stops.
This for me is bordering on that trope of like the detective thing. And someone says something like, so vaguely related that makes them go like
in Grey's Anatomy where someone says something ridiculous and they're like, blue tag, and then they suddenly, what if we made a blue tag for the body?
Please tell me this actually happens.
Probably. I don't know, but it's definitely similar things have happened.
Yeah, it's bordering on that. And again, I understand in terms of this is a book. I understand why it happens so soon.
Charlie has just realised this is a book.
I do get that you don't want like, and then there was 2 weeks and then they realised, I get it, but Jesus Christ, they're not wasting any time,
no,
are they?
We got to move through the pace of this book. It's so good. Do you know Neil was completely underwhelmed by this? He had forgotten it and I was hoping to catch the moment he read it.
I've been hoping for years.
I know. And then he was reading it over Christmas, so I didn't see a lot of him reading it. And I was kind of like, oh, what did you think of, you know, that moment that you'd forgotten? He was like, what moment? And I was like, the locket moment. And he was like, what locket moment? I was like, the bit where they realised they'd handled it. And he was like, yeah, it was fine, wasn't it? And I was like, fine. It's one of the best reveals. It's one of the best planted in moments in the books. It's so good. It's the way it's written to actually feel like a film flashback as well. Like Harry starts thinking through. He's like, the snuff box, the music box that's almost setting us asleep. Like, it's almost like you're watching a film flashback as he says these words.
You know how we joke about if we ever like directed this?
Yeah.
You've got to know that our moment would be Hermione go, blah, 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 and start hitting them. Like, that's all it would be.
And also,
what we do.
And also, how fucking dare you, you fucking idiots, when you made the fifth book. This book was out and you didn't think to put in a scene where they handle the locket.
Yep.
You didn't think that would be cool.
Yeah. I've told this story before, but I genuinely will never forgive them. Like, the mum of one of my friends who ruined this for me. Like, before this book came out, she was just one of the people that had, like, worked it out. Because, you know, people had noticed at that time. And she just told me before this book had come out. And I was like, and bear in mind, I would have been, like, a child at this time. I was like, I can't believe you've actually done that. Like, take that from a child. What are you doing?
Like, well done for you for working it out. It's impressive, but don't tell a child.
Yeah,
don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to have been an adult when this came out and to have been rereading book five and kind of gone, the fuck? Like, my God.
Yeah, just one of those moments, you know, one of these things that I wish that I could remove my memories of reading Harry Potter temporarily to get to relive some of these moments for the first time.
But I just can't wrap my head around the lack of foresight from the filmmakers to not put this and the diadem thing in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it makes me angry. So... yeah, they realise they've all handled this locket and they threw it away. Harry then is like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. They all come to the realisation at the same time. Creature stole a load of stuff. And he thinks in his head, he was going to cling to this thought until forced let it go. What would you have done if the locket ended up in the bin? Like, does Voldemort just live forever because the locket's gone to muggle landfill? Like, are you going to work out which landfill it's gone to and then dig through landfill for the rest of your lives?
Don't know. This reminds me of, like, you know when you find just, like, a random part of something around the house and you're like, what the fuck is this a part of? And you keep it for years and you're like, I can't throw it away because one day I'm going to work out what this is a part of. And then finally you hit the limit and you're like, no.
Gotta go.
Throw it away. And then it's always a week later. Oh, always, this reminds me of that. And then you're like rummaging through the bin trying to find, this is that.
Yeah.
I saw a thing and I've been meaning to do it now. Is like whenever you have like a wire or a part or something like that, you put it in like a basket or something or like a cupboard and you have it all for the thing. And you put a date on it. And you date it. And then after an allocated amount of time.
You throw it.
You throw it.
Interesting. I like that.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense to actually put a date on it because I have things where I'm like, I don't know how long that's been around.
But it's been a long time. I like to imagine if the locket had ended up in landfill, it would become some sort of Jumanji situation where it couldn't have just lived under the earth forever.
Yeah.
Like a bin man would have picked it up because it was calling to him in whispers.
Oh my God. And it's ended up on some like SoundCloud rapper. They think it's like bling.
Literally. Like I truly believe this locket couldn't just end up in a landfill pile because like the Jumanji board, it has to be found.
Yeah.
That would have been a cool side plot. But no, that's not what happened. Oh, I love Jumanji.
I actually really liked the new films and I really didn't see that coming.
I have only watched the first new one once. But yeah, it was campy and brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
What more could I want?
Honestly, when they announced it, I was like, are you fucking kidding?
Yeah.
You're going to ruin it. And no.
Nope.
I really liked it.
So they run down to the kitchen. I don't know why I'm doing an impersonation of running. To look through Creature's cupboard. But it's gone. There's nothing in there. Apart from a book, which is the book that Hermione gave him as a Christmas gift in book 5, which, savage, he didn't take that with him. So Harry calls for him and he obviously immediately appears and he immediately starts calling Hermione a mudblood and Ron a blood traitor. So Harry has to be like, don't call them that. And Harry says this horrible line, but I'm actually glad it's in here because Harry himself gets proven wrong in this book, which is... he would have found Creature a distinctly unlovable object, even if the elf had not betrayed Sirius to Voldemort. And he's talking about it because Creature is so ugly. And what I like about this is literally, I say like, it's a horrible thing for Harry to think. But when they, a month later, have to leave Grimmauld Place, Harry's first thought is, oh my God, Creature's in there alone, having cooked them dinner, waiting for them to come back. So Harry is proven wrong in himself that anyone can be lovable if you show them love. Yeah. And like, I like that as growth, but what a horrible internal line to think.
I know, like and I actually like wrote it down because I was like, to describe like a living thing as an unlovable object is such a level of savagery.
Yeah.
Like,
it doesn't feel like Harry. Like, I know he's angry in this moment, but, and I'm glad this isn't kept. Like, he literally thinks about Creature in such a different way in a month's time. But I also like that it's in here because the end of this chapter raises so many questions about how you morally think of house elves and puts Voldemort and Sirius on the same side of a coin for how they treat house elves. Mm. So what this line is showing us is that Harry is also falling onto that side of the coin.
Yeah.
Like, his love of Dobby does not make him not part of the problem.
Yeah, I think he's also, like, projecting a lot of feelings about Sirius's death onto Creature at this minute, yeah, which kind of explains it. But,
sorry.
Yeah. I feel like unlovable object is only something that you should call someone, like, in bed if they're into that. And there's no other context in which that's, like, an okay thing to call someone.
No, it's utterly abhorrent line, yeah, from Harry. But, yeah, we'll get into the views of house elves in a minute. So he orders Creature to answer him truthfully, and they start going through it. He's like, did you steal that locket? Yes. Where is it now? It's gone. Gone? Mundungus Fletcher stole it. This isn't a surprise. Harry's already caught Mundungus stealing a load of this stuff.
In this book already, and we're like 10 chapters in, Mundungus has caused way more problems than
than he is worth in the order.
Yeah.
Literally, I'm like, yeah, he can steal a few things, but Jesus Christ, he is trouble. Yep, you're right. So yeah, Mundungus has stolen it, and Creature suddenly freaks out. He's like, I failed. I failed Master Regulus's order, and starts just like beating himself up.
Not figuratively.
Not figuratively. So Harry goes, okay, tell me the truth. Tell me what happened. Like, tell me what is going on. Why are you calling it Master Regulus's? Sit up and tell me everything. Like a shred of decency from Harry saying, please sit up rather than like lying with your head on the floor. So Creature starts to tell his story. Sirius ran away. He was a horrible boy, but Regulus was good. Regulus made his family proud, and Regulus joined the Dark Lord. And Creature says a line, which I'd never considered before, and it made me realize how the Malfoys and the Blacks view Voldemort, and that I can almost see how they trick themselves into thinking Voldemort's on the right side of history. And the line was, Voldemort was going to bring the wizards out of hiding. And I'd never thought of it in the way that the Blacks and the Malfoys and families like that view themselves as the oppressed ones, not the oppressors, because they believe that wizards are in hiding, are having to hide their true form, are constantly throughout their lives hiding who they are within a society, and therefore they are oppressors. And I was like, obviously they're wrong, because obviously they're the more powerful ones, but I can almost see how you would have that like cognitive dissonance to make that leap that you are the, you know, the downtrodden one. Like, obviously, to then like take it any further than that, because the next line is actually rule the muggles and the muggle-borns. Like, no. But to think you're the oppressed one, I'm like, yeah, Wizarding Society is hidden. They do have to stay hidden. And I'd never thought that's what they all thought. I kind of thought of it as they're just cruel and want to rule the muggles, not they want to live in plain sight.
Yeah, because I can get that argument. Like, and I've read fantasy that kind of addresses that, like, we have to live in hiding, blah, 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 like that kind of thing. But yeah, it's when you're then like at the point of being like, and we don't want to interbreed with them, where it's like I feel like this is no longer about the fact that you have to live in hiding.
Yeah, I feel like you're using that as an excuse.
Yeah.
So Regulus joined the Dark Lord. And one day, Regulus came home and said Voldemort needed an elf. So Regulus has suggested Creature, and Regulus took Creature to Voldemort, and they went to a cave together. And Harry is literally like feeling waves of dread as this story is told. Creature explains that he was put on a boat with Voldemort. They went to the island, and then he was made to drink a potion. And Harry says inside his own head, this then was how Voldemort tested the defenses surrounding the Horcrux, by borrowing a disposable creature, a house elf. And this really irritates me, this end of this chapter, because we are so close. The discussion at this end of this chapter is wonderful, about how Voldemort views creatures like Creature, house elves, and other creatures like that as disposable, as less than human, underestimating their abilities over and over again because he doesn't view them as the same level as intelligence or anywhere near the emotional capacity. And then Hermione points out that Sirius views them the same way, and you can be a good person and still hold these terrible views because society has been set up in this way, and that will be Wizard's downfall over and over again. You've put this in the last book. And the payoff is that Dobby dies saving them and Voldemort is wrong again. That's not payoff, because you've set up a systemic issue and you're solving it with a personal matter of a favourite character dying and Voldemort underestimating again. And yes, it is Voldemort's downfall again. And yes, that's good payoff in like a personal sense, but not in a sense where you've built a world based on injustice and you don't solve the injustice within your own series. Book in half, because it's so good. Like, the core of the fact that Sirius is a good character, he's on the good side,
yep,
and does a bad thing that leads to his death, yep, is very good.
It's also, I think it's also quite realistic, because at the end of the day, Sirius had a very privileged upbringing, and regardless of how he felt towards his family on a personal level, he still like grew up. I mean, I guess it's kind of slightly implied that maybe the blacks are slightly downtrodden now, but like, he still grew up like in a like fucking manner of a
townhouse. We're talking like upper class, yeah.
You know, went to boarding school and yada, yada, yada. So like, it's kind of like completely unsurprising, because you can be like good, but still be like privileged and have that affect your opinions. Like, at the end of the day, it's about unlearning. Everyone has unlearning to do.
Yeah, and also Sirius missed 13 years of his life, so when he went into jail he was still effectively a child. Yeah. So he comes out with opinions that are still 21 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that it makes a lot of sense for Sirius, absolutely. But yeah, it's infuriating that JK Rowling is like intelligent to a point where it's like she can kind of see things being right or things being wrong, but like, to a point.
Yeah. I love the discussions in this chapter, and it makes me so angry it goes nowhere. So Creature drinks the potion and is left to die on the island. He leans towards the water, drinks the water, and is dragged under. And then Harry says, how did you get away? And Creature says, Master Regulus told me to come back. Harry says, I know, but how did you escape? This. Creature did not seem to understand. Master Regulus told me to come back. And what I really love is it's Ron who has to say to Harry, stop asking him. He disapparated. How? Elf magic isn't like wizard's magic. I always thought it was Hermione who said this line. elves can apparate and disapparate in and out of Hogwarts when we can't. Ron has been told over and over again, you can't disapparate and apparate in out of Hogwarts. So this is a nice round circle of that. But also, Ron is the one of the three to grow up, not with house elves, but aware.
I feel like that's a massive security.
What, that the elves can apparate? Exactly, they've been underestimated again.
By Dumbledore. Bit fucking hypocritical. Because I'm sorry, like, you could have had, like, you know, when Draco was trying to work out how to get the Death Eaters in, it's like, You have house elves that can do that.
Could you sidelong apparate with an elf? Yes, because the trio do it to get out of Malfoy Manor, which has anti-apparation jinxes on it.
So Draco spent all that time working on the fucking cabinets when he could have just got a house elf to, like...
Wow.
Draco.
But yeah, I like that it's Ron that points out, because he's the one that's grown up with this... with the Wizarding World, he understands how house elf magic works. But also, I like that we finally get payoff of Hermione saying to them for 5 years, you can't apparate or disapparate inside the Hogwarts grounds.
Yeah. It's quite funny, actually. I wonder how much they could have worked out that it's Regulus by thinking about, okay, it's going to be someone probably from an old Wizarding family. Like, when you rationally think about it, then there's not many of those families. Think about what families have...
Why would they think it's an old Wizarding family?
They were a Death Eater. Like, I know that it's not like 100%, but you can think that, like,
yeah,
statistically, it's probably going to be someone that's pure blood.
Sure.
If not half blood. That massively narrows it down to then think about B. I feel like you could definitely at least get a list of like three families and then look at those families.
I suppose the letter didn't even say that they were a Death Eater, though. The letter just said that's in the hopes true. That by the time...
That's true.
But to know that it's there, you would have to think it's someone who is aware of Voldemort's plan. So the next leap should be, was it someone on the inside?
Yeah.
Like, and they never discussed that. Is it someone who was a Death Eater?
I guess it's the kind of thing, they're very lucky that they stumble into it. And maybe that's a train of thought. Had they not stumbled into it, they would have gotten there eventually to start to think about, okay, who could it be?
Yeah. Who would know this?
Yeah.
Hermione is crying at this point, and she's saying, of course, Voldemort wouldn't have considered the fact that house elves can apparate away, just like all purebloods who treat them like animals. It never would have occurred to him that they might have magic he didn't. And again, we're hammering home that Voldemort's like problem over and over again without it ever fully coming to fruition. But also, Creature says the house elf's highest law is his master's bidding. Like, Creature is not allowed to disobey Regulus. There's a cruelty in the fact he had to come home rather than dying, in the fact that Regulus said, you have to come home. Ugh. So he tells Regulus everything, and Regulus then takes him to the cave. And for a horrible moment, Harry thinks, oh my God, Creature was made to drink the potion again.
I had like completely forgotten about this. I think because in the film, isn't it, it just said like, it's kind of brushed off like when then he died shortly after or whatever.
Yeah.
Or he was like hunted down or something. And we never get, I don't think that we get this elaborated on.
No.
So like reading this, I was like, oh my God, no, Regulus drank it. And then like he literally sacrificed himself, even though
he could have made Creature drink it and disapparate them both.
And also because, okay, if we're going to narrow it down, I know it's like a questionable take, but if we're going to narrow it down to things being about for the greater good, out of Creature and out of Regulus, who had the best chance of destroying it? Obviously Regulus. So whilst it's horrific to say, I would have seen the argument from Regulus's point of view of being like, no, it has to be Creature to drink it because I need to survive so that I can. So it makes it like an especially good thing that he's still like, no, it's still not right to order someone.
And to know that Creature got away once and could apparate them out of there again and yet still chooses to be him that drinks the potion.
It's hard when it's like, you know, I don't want J.K. Rowling to write anything else. I need to like find a fan fiction or something about it. But I want to fill in the blanks. How do you go from like being a Death Eater and like worshipping Voldemort to being like, actually, no, to the point where you're willing to do that?
Yeah.
Like, what's the in-between?
I really want to know.
Yeah.
The in-between, like how invested he was when he joined up, whether that was actually just Sirius's point of view of how invested he was, whether actually his family kind of forced him into it.
Yeah.
Like,
what happened that completely disenfranchised him to that point.
Yeah.
How did he like connect the dots between what happened with the creature?
Send us your fan fiction recommendations that touch on this, please.
Yeah, all your theories.
But also, creature had to watch his best friend and the person he loves most in the world drink the potion, knowing the pain it felt, and get dragged underwater by the Inferi, and then was not able to complete Regulus's last request. And bear in mind, house elves are enshrined by their own internal law to destroy the locket. Mm. So creature, by the time Harry met him for the first time, has been punishing himself continuously for 13 years.
I was thinking as well about, you know, in terms of why did he not just make creature do it, and also why he might have been driven to join the Death Eaters and stuff. And I was thinking about like potentially how lonely he is. He's the younger brother, right?
Yeah.
So, like, when you think about it, he's grown up with a brother that he has nothing in common with.
Yeah.
That, quite frankly, doesn't want anything to do with him. And potentially it was kind of a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy of Sirius being like, well, you're going to be the same as the rest of the family. So Regulus kind of feeling like, in a way, that he had to be.
Yeah.
So he's not grown up with someone, and he's probably grown up in the same, like, toxic, horrible household that Sirius has, even if he, like, shares or, like, pretends to share the same opinions. He's then probably like very much in his shadow at Hogwarts, where Sirius has probably been going around saying XYZ about him. He might have a reputation. Either way, like, Sirius is this like brilliant, charismatic, good looking student. He very much would be in his shadow.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering like how much of that potentially contributed to him feeling quite isolated.
Yeah.
Not that I'm blaming Sirius for this, obviously, but I was just trying to think about like how he ends up signing up if, like, fundamentally he's not actually on board with it.
Yeah, I can see it. Sirius is swanning around like, I'm so much better than everyone else. I disagree with our family. Whereas Regulus might have just been like, I don't know, like, I like my family. They're nice to me, but maybe I don't agree with everything. Mm. Like, there's a lot of internal thought there. And also, Sirius rejected everyone in his family so much that he hated creature. Whereas Regulus, as we can see from this text, even when he was, you know, a Death Eater evil, showed creature unbelievable kindness and compassion.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe giving him to Voldemort wasn't the most kind thing to do, but...
But also, can you say no to that?
I mean, maybe that's one of the things that turned him, though. Like, hey, you abused my house self. That's my friend.
Exactly. And especially if, like, growing up and over the summers and before Hogwarts, if he didn't have a friend in the house because Sirius didn't like him and just assumed he would be like his family... That only leaves creature. Maybe they literally like Bezzy mates.
And this is something Hermione then brings up in the next page, which again hammers home this point we're doing again and again and again.
And I'm kind of like, you know what, Hermione, you're right. I'm not sure if you should have said it.
So Harry says, so basically creature's like, I couldn't destroy it. I failed Regulus. And he's sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. And Harry's kind of feeling sorry for him, but goes, I don't understand you. Regulus's final act was against Voldemort. And Sirius shows up and you sold him to Voldemort. And Hermione goes, you don't understand. Creature doesn't think like that. He's a slave. They're used to bad and brutal treatment. What Voldemort did was not out of the common way. What do wizard wars mean to an elf-like creature? He's loyal to people who are kind to him, and Regulus was. And it just like was like a knife in the heart of just like, why would creature care about the wider wizarding war? Why would he care about selling Sirius out when Sirius treated him like dirt? Like, and this is the thing, when we were talking in that last episode, that question we got about like systemic change, like Hermione, whether she actually wants systemic change. I think this passage shows she still does. She's just obviously very invested at the moment in the immediate issue, which is defeating Voldemort. But she still clearly cares about the absolutely awful, awful way that house elves are enslaved into wizarding lore. Because, house elves have no room for independent thought because they're so abused. Dobby is an exception to the rule. The house elves are just so used to casual cruelty that they cling to anyone that is kind to them. So yeah, when, you know, Bellatrix and Narcissa were nice to him, he gave them all the information he wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, she's absolutely right. And I do get why she does say it. It's just, it's very in character for her that it's really not the most sensitive thing to say to Harry.
Well, yeah, then literally the next thing she says when Harry's kind of like, oh, well, you know, whatever. She says, Sirius was horrible to Creature and it's no good looking at me like that. You know it's true.
She's fucking right.
She's but very right.
Hun, be sensitive.
But I think Harry needs to hear this at this moment because it's been a year and a half since what happened to Sirius happened and he still hasn't fully learnt from it.
Like, yeah, but then I'm not, like, I don't know. Do you have to learn from someone's death? Like, it's... I agree with what she's saying, yeah. And I do, I like that it's phrased that way because I think it's in character for Hermione, but I think if I were to say it, I think that you can communicate the same information and maybe be a bit more sensitive to Harry as opposed to kind of being like, well, Sirius's death was kind of his own fault.
Yeah, there are better ways to do it, but I think Hermione is panicking in this moment because... Like I was just saying that Sirius and Voldemort are like the same side of a coin in the way they treat house elves. She sees Harry falling into that same side and those same behaviours. Mm. And those behaviours are indicative of the Wizarding World. And what's a bit scary possibly for her is that Harry didn't grow up in the Wizarding World. He has no reason to exhibit these behaviours because he didn't grow up with house elves being a normal thing like Ron did and therefore inherently believing they should be slaves. So to then be parroting those beliefs that creatures should be, you know, treated like dirt... could never feel sympathy for him is scary. But yeah, I agree there's better ways to phrase it than just like, Sirius was horrible to Creature, don't look at me like that.
Yeah.
And but then Harry thinks in his own head of Dumbledore's, something Dumbledore said to us, I do not think Sirius ever saw Creature as a being with feelings as acute as a human's. But how dare you put all this in? How dare you put all this deep conversation in, these moral conflicts about what viewing someone as a human looks like?
Yeah.
To not finish it off, to have the full circle be Dobby dying and Creature running out with a knife to stab some Death Eaters in the legs.
It's so fucking wild. I don't understand. You're a grown woman that's like fairly intelligent. Yeah. How did you not realise what you were not doing?
Yeah.
Not doing.
So Harry finally realises everything Hermione is saying and he starts treating Creature with a modicum of kindness and he's like, I still really need you to do something, but I'm going to say please. Mm-hmm. He's like, Creature, I'm going to ask you to do something. Could you please go find Mundungus? Please. If you want to, please.
This is where Creature gets to go full Taken.
Yeah, Creature's like, I fucking will. Yeah, love
it. He's gone full Liam Neeson, yep. Full John Wick.
Yep. Before that, he has a miniature breakdown because Harry's like, oh, actually, I've got a great idea. Here's the locket that traumatized you. And Creature just for half an hour is like.
And Ron's like, oh. Too much, mate.
It was way too much.
Too far.
Maybe do that when he came back with Mundungus. Yeah. Maybe not right now. So they have to calm Creature down for over half an hour. But finally, Creature disapparates to go find Mundungus. That's the end of the chapter. Woo. It's very good.
Very good.
If it had ever been all those thoughts finished off.
Right.
Finish those thoughts off. We don't have a question. Aww. Ask Todd a question.
Todd, do you like Hannah? I'm not kidding. He just whacked me with his tail.
I think that's a no.
Hi, Todd.
Todd is down there. She's not talking to my crotch.
Hi, Todd.
He's really just glaring at you.
Used to it.
I can't believe we don't have a question.
I'm so sorry.
You should be.
Well.
That was a chapter.
That was a chapter that we read. I'm very excited for the next two chapters. I know that they're good ones.
Yeah.
I think I've separated the next two as well. I think you've got a load of independent chapters in a row.
But
exciting.
Very.
Yeah.
We will see you in 2 weeks' time, apparently.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Goblet of Wine. If you want to follow us around the internet, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok under Goblet of Wine Podcast.
Or if you'd like to support us further, you can find us on Patreon, where you can get access to bonus episodes, our Discord, and loads more perks.
Thank you so much to our Hufflepuff tier patrons for helping us produce these episodes.
Yolanda, Sir Bandersnatch, Samuel, Michael, Kylie, Jasmine, Florian, and Ardent.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and as always, fuck JK Rowling and the TERFs.
Bye!